Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Stop in a lay-by and enjoy Jules and Jim's Joyride. In the arena of greatness, we think of Caligula for his cruelty, for Nero for his impulsiveness, and Solomon for his wisdom.
Yes.
But of course, in wisdom, we think of one man for true greatness, an amazing player of music, an amazing writer of music, an amazing producer of music, and also a man that's unbelievably, as well as that, has written comedy series. He is my dear friend who's here today, Nitin Sawhney.
Oh, hi. Well, what an introduction, Nitin. Yeah, were you expecting that?
No, because I didn't actually write the comedy. I was one of the... Well, I was originally like a writer with Sanj, who you know really well. With Sanjeev Bhaskar, we had a show ages ago called... Well, we were called, collectively, The Secret Asians. Although some people actually missed that altogether and called us The Secret Agents. Like when I had an album called London Undersound, and people say, your album, London Underground, is kind of like totally missing the point. But yeah, we toured up and down the country ages ago. And then
when was this? What period are you talking about?
Well, this is about... Oh, blimey, it's like early 90s, I think.
I remember seeing you somewhere.
Well, we were at the Oval House, and we played Waterman's in Brentford and Tom Allen Centre in East London, and then we played, we went around the country quite a bit, and it was just like, I mean, you know, to be honest with you, I always just thought it was like having fun with a mate, because Sanj and I went to college together and we'd known each other a long time. I did the Radio 4 series with them for a couple of years, and then I kind of... but this wasn't my...
Then you drifted into music.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. It's like, no, I was obviously making albums in bands already, but I kind of... it was a weird aberration, which is kind of like a surreal blot in the landscape when I kind of think back.
We were talking earlier on about, you know, being in bands and stuff, travelling around. What did you two go around on, a tandem?
Yeah, it would be great up to Manchester. No, mainly it was vans, and I think it was mainly vans, occasionally the train. But I think because we started using a few props, and then you'd have to get in vans and stuff, or Sanj would take us up in his car. But yeah,
you see, it's a side of show business the general public don't usually see, how the person actually travels, because it is all about travel. I mean, that's the key to everything, in whether it's music, whether it's comedy, acting. You've got to get in and get a long way.
In a cheap van.
In a cheap van to start with.
But in the early 90s, we became mega superstars and went off on big tours in a huge luxury bus with TVs and kitchens, lounges and all that stuff. And so do a lot of bands and people like that, but no one ever tells them that it's them who's paying for it.
Yes.
Yes.
And at the end of this mega star tour, you said you got 4 and 9 pence paid.
So if you, and that's why people with the right frame of mind go around in the worst crappy transit van they can find that they've bought for £50 at the back of Loot.
Yes. I know. I think that's the thing, because the novelty initially is like you go with... Is it Phoenix? I mean, you go with these amazing kind of tour buses that will have all the bells and whistles, but then after a while, reality kicks in. You think, okay, yeah, I'm going back to a splitter bus. But it was. But having said that, I mean, I've done quite a few amazing tours in tour buses, and found myself in the most beautiful locations, because you do overnighters. You're on these sleeper buses, and you'll wake up in some random place. And one time, I remember waking up in somewhere in Switzerland, and just looking at these beautiful snow-capped mountains. It was just an amazing way to wake up.
I love it. That I was in a cafe once on the lakes of Geneva with a bottle of Evian. And
you sound like an advert.
And then...
How's our new sponsors?
Looking out of the window, I could see the same mountain. on the bottle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh wow!
You were living the dream. I think it's like living. I do quite like that with transport, with a lot of things, living the brochure style life. So, yeah. But often it can be a very
that's
old.
That's what you'll have on your grave. Yes. You live the brochure style life.
An aspiration life.
Yeah, it's a brochure style life. And I'd like to thank the cooperative funeral services for putting me in the GTX model funeral vehicle. Living the life from the adverts, and particularly with transport, and it wouldn't really matter. You know, if I looked at an aeroplane sort of advert from the 1960s when it was glamorous to travel by plane, I'd want to be sort of on the top deck of the 747 sipping cocktails with people with sort of big hair and black, wearing sort of dinner jackets, which I think is what you wore to fly. Exactly, which you wore to fly. The same with a vehicle. Even if when I was in Squeeze, when we were going around in transit vans, I'd look at the transit van brochures and see people with a set of blue overalls, flat cap, and a pencil in the top pocket, and think, yeah, that's us, ready for work. But anyway, that was talking about the method of travelling around. But I think, Nitin, you're quite a keen cyclist as well, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I've recently bought an electric bike, which is, I mean, I love cycling anyway, but it's kind of, I think it's just made me phenomenally lazy, which is quite bad. I kind of thought, you know, my thinking behind it was, you know, I'm not cycling enough, I want something new to kind of reinvigorate me and kind of get me more into it. But it's amazing. It's an amazing thing. Because also my thinking was that I'll go somewhere quite far, and you know, and sometimes you kind of think, oh no, I can't be bothered to cycle that way back, and it's kind of like it becomes a chore on the way back. With this, it doesn't matter how far you go, you can get back to wherever you want to go, and it's quite nice.
Is this going to be the future of motorcycling?
Well, it might be, actually.
Do you think? I mean, I've got two motorcycles. I can't think. There isn't an electric one yet, is there?
There is. There's one I saw recently, which is, I could tell you all about it, but it sounds like we're advertising anything. It's from Selfridges at 15 grand, actually.
Is it really?
I saw it recently.
Where's it
and
from?
It looked wicked. It's from the gadget department. But yeah, no,
really?
I saw it.
Really? A full, like, 500cc?
It looks really futuristic.
But it doesn't have any cc because it's electric, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but, you know, is it like there's not just an electric bicycle? It
goes up to 95 miles per hour.
Yeah.
That's something like that.
I bet it doesn't look that good.
It looks cool.
Does it?
I think so.
I'll go and check it out. You never know.
I mean, I think
maybe they'll send us one free and give it a run.
Well, it's available in Selfridges. I did go to an auction of bicycles because I was after a Dursley Pedersen. A Dursley Pedersen, and I can safely say this, they're not our sponsors because they went out of business, I think, probably 70 years ago. I was at a sale looking at a Dursley Pedersen, which is one of these vintage sort of strange bone shaker looking bikes, and there was a penny farthing, and I don't think that's the right name for them. It's a proper name, is it? There's another name.
Is that a generic name?
Oh, is
yes,
it not?
Yes, I think there's it's like an ordinary or
large
something.
Large wheel, small
something
wheel.
Like that. Anyway, I said, well, I'll have a go at
that's
that.
A chunk to large wheel, small meal.
Large wheel, small wheel. Can you
can
say
you
that?
Do it right. You try it, Nitin.
Large wheel, small wheel.
Yes,
quicker.
Large wheel, small wheel. Large wheel, small wheel.
I can't talk that.
Large wheel, small wheel. Large wheel, small
wheel. Large wheel, small wheel.
Yes,
I got it.
Large or small?
Yeah, go on. As you were saying.
So I tried to climb on top of this. The auctioneer said, oh, it's perfectly simple. And he pushed the penny farthing. And then once you'd got to a certain speed and the velocity was reached, you then sort of mounted it like you mount a horse, I suppose. Anyway, I tried this and I just started running behind it, and it was just too frightening to get that high. And then when you stop, you just fall over sideways,
well,
break your ankle.
It's about 6 foot high. I mean, the seat, isn't it? And what are you, 5 foot two?
Something like that. Well, yeah, 3 foot maybe.
Have you been on one?
Do you know what I think my great 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 grandfather was a world champion penny farthing cyclist.
Wow. That's amazing. That terrified me.
I've got no evidence of this. It's just my dad told me
this. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's good enough. Do you have any interesting relatives from the past that can match such a boast?
No.
No, I don't think any of us have.
Well, no, I did. You know, who do you think you are?
Yeah, and did they come up with him?
Well, they did the pilot on me because of my ridiculous past.
Lineage.
Yeah, it is. It involves kings and so forth. But that's the other side.
Which king?
Edward the VII.
Oh, wow.
Your father?
No, my grandfather used to stand guard outside his bedroom whilst he was with a maid and get half a crown for it. Because my my grandfather's parents were head butler and head maid at various grand houses around. And my grandfather got run over by the lord and lady of a particular house in Rickmansworth, and they didn't have a kid, so they said, can we raise my grandfather?
Wow.
So, yeah, so they did the pilot on me.
Right. So you discovered all this? You didn't know?
Well, I knew it all. We knew it all anyway, but you've got to pretend you... I've never heard it before.
You're giving
and
it
then
away.
Weep.
Right. Weep. Spoiler alert.
But music can have, of course, a very strong effect. Music can make people weep, can't it?
I mean, yeah, I get very moved by music, obviously. Mm. I mean, like, you know, some composers do that to me, you know, a lot. And I think it's interesting because... I think French Romantic, Debussy...
Debussy will make me weep any day.
Yeah, L'Après Midi d'un Faune, you know, like some of these kind of beautiful kind of orchestral pieces.
Ravel's Piano Concerto in G, that'll get you going.
Yeah.
I was playing... and we, by the way, we're not going to play any examples of this on the programme because we haven't paid for the clearance. But
so we'll just hum it.
Yes, exactly.
I'll start humming Ravel's Piano Concerto in G. You join in.
The German Requiem by Brahms. If you could just hum that to give it a little effect. Yes. But I was playing that in the car, you see, and it's a bit rainy, and I'm in a traffic jam, and there was just a woman with a small child in the rain. And listening to that music, it was completely unrelated events, but I almost felt like crying. Mm. I didn't offer them a lift because they'd have thought I was weird, you know.
But open the window and they have Brahms belting out and you weeping.
Get in my car.
I'll tell you an interesting... You probably know these. I'm going to give you a couple of Eric Satie facts. Mm-hmm. You know he was mad. Quite mad.
Yeah.
Well, he had two grand pianos and he kept one on top of the other one, and the one on the top he used to keep his unpaid bills in.
Really?
Which
we all do that, don't we?
And also, he only ate white food. Did you know that?
Ate white food?
Only white food, like potatoes,
my daughter used to do that.
Egg white.
Food racism.
He had some theory that good for you if you only ate white food.
No, I know a couple of people like that.
Really?
It's quite common.
I'm on a brown food diet, which is beef, brown bread, sprouts...
But sprouts are green.
Not the way I cook them. Fell into that one, didn't you?
I certainly did.
So, synesthetic. So, like, I worked with a pianist called Helene Grimaud, who's an amazing classical pianist, and she's synesthetic to the point where colours really disturb her if they're wrong, you know, around when she's playing certain pieces of music. And she uses that to memorise, you know, like a whole massive repertoire as well. It's kind of like this idea that you have colour association and kids... they learn sometimes perfect pitch through colour association.
I visited Bach's birthplace.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was very modest, his birthplace. Right. And it was in Eisenach, in old East Germany. This is last year. And there's the Wartburg Castle on top of the hill there, which, of course, as we all know, where they'd have the big singing contest, and Wagner based the Tannhäuser on the singing contest over there. And if you didn't win, I think they used to chuck you over the battlements, but that's another story. And then down in the little village, and it's like almost like a Disney cartoon of Castle on the Hill and this little village, which Eisenach's a bit bigger now, also home to the Wartburg factory, which is another little motoring fact, the Eastern European
vehicle. The Wartburgs.
Wartburg cars, yeah, made there.
Yeah.
A nice picture, just while we're on transport, a nice picture of Herbert Austin, who started Austin Cars, visiting the Wartburg factory before the war. Anyway, same place where Bach comes from. But the point was, although he'd made all this fantastic music, unlike his contemporary Handel, he never went anywhere. He wasn't keen on transport. So he really just stayed in Germany.
He used to walk everywhere.
Yeah, and his first big walk was he was orphaned, and him and his two brothers, his parents were the town musicians, but they died, and they had a letter saying of introduction to the music school. So they walked to Leipzig, which is maybe 120 miles away.
Yes, right.
Age 10, through the forests, past witches, which they had in those
How
days,
far was it?
And giants that they had in those days, and trolls and the lot, and they walked all of that way. 120 miles when they're little lads like that.
Did they walk that for fun or for...
No, they'd been orphaned.
Oh, they were orphaned.
They were orphaned and they were going to...
It wasn't
introduce...
an afternoon stroll.
No, it was... But they thought, well, they've got to do something. So they walked all that way, got to Leipzig, presented the letter saying, this is young Bach and his brothers. Please, he's quite good at music. Could he come to your school? And they laughed at him. They're not laughing now.
Thank you.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But Nitin, you also, when we were talking earlier, you said that you travelled abroad and quite liked travelling.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, it's interesting when you talk about planes, because one, and Sanjeev Bhaskar, because we went on a Concorde flight together as a British Airways giveaway. I won a trip on Concorde, which was quite mad. And I think we were just so blown away by the whole concept. And we were just kind of staring around us in disbelief that we were on Concorde, and all these kind of commuters who regularly took it were just kind of just sitting there kind of very casually. And we were just shouting at each other across the aisles, just kind of very excited, probably just, hacking everyone off on the flight. But yeah, I mean, I've flown a lot. And my biggest trip was in about, I think it was 2001, where I went around the world. I met Nelson Mandela. I spent time with Aboriginal Australians, Native Americans on Mount Shasta in near Sacramento. When I was traveling around, I mean, obviously, planes to get between countries, but even sometimes internally as well, planes sometimes, I mean, it was everything, trains. I mean, around India, it's a real experience to get trains. It's quite crazy.
Is it as mad as it looks? I've only ever seen, I've never traveled
through India. And cars in India. I mean, it's like medieval jousting, because people are, when they're coming at you, when they're driving on the main roads, I mean, the main roads are really not very, I mean, in a lot of places, they're just, there's no real road there. It's just kind of like a load of rubble. so it can be really bad. And you're kind of driving through, and people will avoid each other by driving through ditches and all kinds of stuff. So I got used to this when I was about 8 years old. And I mean, I all kinds of transport at that age, because I went on my first elephant going up to...
Hang on, that's a first. Well, that's a first for
which
this show.
You've been on an elephant before.
I've been on an elephant, yeah. But it was a holiday experience, in Thailand, where you get taken on, you walk around up and down a river. But did you use it as actual transport?
Well, we were going up to a palace in Jaipur. And the thing is that you're on the side of this. You're on the side of the elephant, and you're literally on the edge of a cliff. And so it feels like...
Oh, you're hanging off one of the side seat things.
Exactly. So your legs are dangling over the edge, and you're looking straight down, which is terrifying. So I remember... And the elephants aren't the most steady kind of creatures, because they're all also really overworked, So the thing is, going up there... And these elephants just crapping in front of you the whole day. It's just such a weird experience. So I remember that. The weirdest, I suppose, in India, I mean, when I was about 8 years old, I was on the back of a horse at my uncle's wedding. And when you're that age, you're kind of like a mascot at a wedding. So it's called a sevala. And I remember there was a brass band around us in this village playing When the Saints Go Marching In, which was a very trippy thing for an eight-year-old. And so badly... that I actually, being a really precocious kid who played a lot of classical piano, was started crying. I said, there was your weeping.
Because it was so bad?
There was your weeping.
Well, because it was so bad? Or because it was so good?
Oh, really? Because it was so bad. Because they were playing that.
And I was child, I felt stop, like it was torture. Please. No.
I was not focusing on the horse experience. I was focusing on this terrible brass band. But India's a crazy place for transport. It's I've had so many weird experiences there.
But you're saying that you went to, on your world trips, you say you went both to the outback to visit the Aboriginal folk in the...
Yeah.
And Nelson Mandela. I mean, look, incredible people to visit.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're visiting sort of people, you'd have to sort of think about what car you're going to, or vehicle you're going to be in, because you don't want to look too flash, but you don't want to look too hopeless So that did that sort of inspire what you were in?
Yeah, well, I mean, like with going to Arnhem Land in Australia, you have to go in by plane, so that's initially, and then you're picked up in a jeep, and the jeep is also how I got to Nelson Mandela's house. So I kind of literally was reading the last book of his last page of his book, Long Walk to Freedom, in the car, and I kind of in the jeep, and then I just kind of finished the last page and then was led straight out to meet him, which was a very weird thing. It's like seeing the main character of a book you've just
that
been reading strange. Come to life,
yeah,
which was mad but amazing as well. So yeah,
and he must have been a fascinating man to meet.
Oh my god, he was very funny first of all, which I was surprised by, because he's very statesmanlike in the book, and then he's still got that kind of gravitas, but he was I remember his secretary came into the room and said, the president's on the phone to speak to you. And he looked at me and said, how many more questions have you got? And I said, two or three. And he goes, oh, can you ask him to call me back in 10 minutes?
Cool.
Which was a very humbling moment. And that's where I actually felt quite weepy, because I thought, wow, because I thought, he's a true egalitarian. He truly saw people as equal. And I thought I'd never see that in a politician. You know, I'm quite cynical about politics and politicians, and that's when I thought, this is the same guy I've been reading about. So that was an amazing thing. So, yeah.
Once we did the G8 conference, and President Clinton and Mrs. Clinton were there, and he was charming, I have to say, and he looked you straight in the eye, and like you felt like he was listening to every word you said. There was a little sort of drinks party, and my saxophone player surrounded him. And were talking to him, because he played the saxophone, Bill Clinton, did you see?
Yeah.
And they were talking to him really close up over in the corner of the room, and this went on and on and on. And then the room was thinning out, and there was nobody left at the party, and it was just like you could tell, like CIA blokes or whatever they are, they got on their walkie-talkie, you know, earpieces. And
he's going to get the sax out.
Yeah, that's right, he's going to get the sax out. Or just checking the DNA of my saxophone players, make sure there's nothing dodgy about them. Anyway, so they're talking to him, and in the end, the whole place went, like, he was still talking to them in this huddle, and there's just me and the sort of CIA bloke standing in the corner. And eventually he left. And I said, that's amazing, he talked to you. He said, you four people had more time with him. People would pay $5 million for that, for half an hour with the president, like you've had, the most powerful man in the world, you know.
Sax talk.
Yeah, it was also. And I said, what did you ask him all important, you know, what did you ask him? The Roswell alien, legit or not? You know, all that sort of question. Yeah. You're there, you could ask anything.
No,
you
asked him what reads he is.
Yeah, exactly. How's your embouchure? Boring.
And now a message from our sponsors. Now look here, my trousers are the Rolls-Royce of slacks.
They certainly are aerodynamic, family-friendly and low emission.
One of the most embarrassing motoring moments I've ever had. Oh. I'd got a new Range Rover and I'd just put my parents in the back of it and said, let's go for a drive. And we went down to Great Stone on Sea, which is a huge mile flat area of sand off the Kent coast. And I said, it's a Range Rover, it's four-wheel drive, we'll go onto the sand. And it was brand new. I just had it a day, went onto the sand, and it sank gently up to the axles in the beach.
But it's supposed to have the best wading capabilities of any off-road vehicle in its
class.
Not
in quicksand.
That must have been I'm not kidding. I mean, that must have been terrifying.
Well, it was. And I said, and so my mum and dad are sitting in the back seat. And I said, there's a Coast Guard just about. I was going to go and ask them. Went to the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard said, go to the pub. There's plenty of people with tractors in there. And they'd obviously got a deal on, because this happens quite a lot.
But how did you get out of
it was sand, but you could still walk on
it.
It just sank. So I'm looking back at my mum and dad sitting in the back seat as I'm on the shore, and I'm talking to these. I'm going to the pub, and I said, I'm afraid I've sank into the sand. So one of the sailors, the tractor driver, or sailors, whatever, said to the other one, George, it's your turn. So he goes, right, £200. And that was to pull me out his tractor. So they can charge whatever they want to pull fools
out of... They just wait
out
for people
of,
to just...
Yeah,
kind of,
But when, like you said, when you said you put your parents in the Range Rover at the beginning of that, I was imagining them like they were just sort of enjoying themselves watching the television, and you just lifted them out from the television and inserted them in
well,
the...
Well, kind of, maybe. That was, I just said, do you want to go for it? Anyway, that was embarrassing for me, for them.
Was that the first time they'd ever been out with you in
in that car? And I found a photograph of it the other day, which brought it all back to me. Anyway, that was the most embarrassing motoring moment of my life.
Years ago, I was in a car with, I think Mira Sial was in the front, Sanjay Bhaskar's wife, yeah, and a brilliant comedian and actress. But yeah, I was in the back of the car, and I'm arachnophobic. So the thing is, we were on the motorway. I mean, I'm a lot better now, right? Because I get therapy. I've had therapy since. But at the time, I could not deal with the idea of a spider being in a confined space with me. So a spider kind of came down from the roof of the car in front of me. And instead of like doing what a normal person would do if they had a problem with the spider, just kind of wave it away or whatever, I tried to get out of the car in the middle of the...
On the
motorway.
Wow, that's
because screaming, I was that terrified. A really high-pitched scream.
Probably, yeah. I should imagine. I wasn't aware of the pitch of my scream at the time, but I think, yeah. I mean, that was...
Sanjeev was driving.
No, he wasn't there, but it was a bass player that I was working with, Shrikant Sriram. But yeah, I mean, like, and then somebody had the presence of mind because realised that they knew I was arachnophobic and saw what it was. Because I was literally, I had no concept of what I was doing. I just needed to get away from the spider.
Wow, terrifying.
So that's
real arachnophobia.
Extremely embarrassing. Yeah.
Although, if my friend Leo Sayer, I was ringing him the other day, just drop a name there if I may.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's in Australia. And I get through, I tried to look at the time. I said, have I got you a good moment? Because he was coming on tour with us, you know, we wanted to talk about what we were going to do. He said, well, actually, no. He said, "It's the timing's all right." He said, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning, whatever. It was a perfectly reasonable time to call. He said, but it's not a good moment because I'm underneath the building where I live in the car park, and I've just got in my car and shut the door, and on the wing mirror of the car, there is a huge, just hanging off the wing mirror of the car, is a huge huntsman spider.
Oh,
which
my
is
God.
The huntsman's
a massive.
Yes, it's like the size of your hand sort of thing. He said, and so... I don't know what to do. I want to drive off with this, like, kind of, you know, I don't know. So he said, I've rung the security of the front of the building and I'm waiting for them to arrive.
So what, to get rid of it?
Well, to deal with the situation.
What would you have done?
If I'd have been...
I would have... It was on the wing mirror,
you
right?
Were right with
yes.
spiders.
I would have... Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't have bothered me. I would have... But if I was terrified, I would have backed the car, driven through the underground car park and clipped the wing mirror on a post... Therefore, destroying the huntsman spider.
But what you might do is you might
enrage
smash
it.
You might smash your wing mirror, which cost you a lot, and enrage the spider.
Yeah.
And
which
at the same
then,
time,
then increases which, in size tenfold.
Yes. Exactly. Well, that's what they do, double in size.
And your entire car.
And then also, when you smash the wing mirror, it then rebounds and smashes the glass on your window, so he climbs through there and gets you.
I knew there was a flaw in my plan.
There's two things about this, because I actually, the reason I know I'm a lot better now was I think the pitch of my scream had gone down a bit when I actually saw probably the biggest spider I've ever seen come out of the when I was in a place in India a couple of years ago. I was having a shower and this spider came flying out of the drain.
Flying out?
Yeah, I mean, really fast. Oh. And like just shot across the ground, and I was like, I mean, I did scream, but I kind of managed to keep presence of mind, which I hadn't been able to do a few years before when I had since I had therapy. But it's such a strange thing because you kind of have this sense of kind of I don't know, you kind of, it's like a dissociative experience. You can't you no longer feel like you're in your body. It's kind of, it's just the weirdest thing.
Yeah, I kind of like spiders. I've got my two daughters, one of them especially. Hate spiders, and I say, well, what do you prefer, flies? Because they're getting rid of the flies for you.
It's a very dad sort of thing to say. I'm terrified of spiders. Well, do you hate flies? It doesn't help at all, I'm afraid. Doesn't help my situation, doesn't help my fear, doesn't help me deal with it. Thank you very much, Dad.
Yeah, right, so that's what your therapist said to you.
Not to be confused with arachibutyrophobia, which I found out is a fear of peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth.
So, well, that doesn't sound too good either.
Well, we're all frightened of that.
Weird phobias. What's the weirdest phobia you've...
I don't know. I mean, I can't bear polystyrene rubbed together.
Oh, really? Me neither. Or how about a paintbrush with all the brushes taken out, rubbed up a blackboard the wrong way?
No, that's equal. Yeah,
that's horrible.
Yeah, but what is it? There's something about... What does that sound... Back in the times of our evolution, we live in the fear of high-pitched squeaks.
Yeah. No. What is that about?
Speaking of transport, but thinking, what do we... There was a little while ago, the strange obelisk Not obelisk.
A monolith.
Monolith.
Monoliths in Utah and Romania.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Which is
and which like not unlike the one in 2001.
Yeah.
With the
which I think it's a copy of.
Yeah. But anyway, what sort of transport do you think they used to get it there?
Well, I think an invisible helicopter, because no one's actually said that they saw how these got there, because they're massive, great things. I mean, they're like 13 foot high or something like that. And the one from Utah has actually disappeared now. So yes. Somebody's gone back to pick it up.
I read that somebody took it away. They're like
Stonehenge, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's two of them. There's only two of them at the moment, but maybe.
But the Stonehenge one, they're like icebergs. They've got there's the same amount under the ground.
That's there we are. There's an interesting bit of transport to think. Talk about early transport. Because the Stonehenge ones, in all the pictures that we see in our very well-informed and accurate Ladybird books, show the loincloth-clad henge folk pushing the stones on trees that had the branches cut off that they could use as rollers to roll them along on. Because it was just prior, I think, to the full invention of what we call the wheel.
Yeah.
But is this how they did the pyramids, though? Is this the same? So what?
Same,
they
same blokes.
But they used water, didn't they? You know, they used water to help the motion of the wheels or whatever, from what I recall. But it's kind of like...
And I heard recently it wasn't slaves that they used. It was everyone was in on it, and that's how it worked so well. They were all like top flight engineers.
Wow.
A whole lot of cities built around pyramids. How can we know who they were,
you know, what their names were?
Is that von Daniken, like, theory of them being aliens or whatever, you know? But it is kind of mad because there's such precision with the architecture, because I think the Great Pyramid has got, it's a very precise figure, which is the exact, I can't remember, is it cubic inches or whatever? They talk about the precise number of days of the year, including a leap year or whatever, and it's very precisely engineered in terms of the diameter of it.
Incredible engineering.
And all covered in alabaster.
Yeah.
So it'd reflect the sunlight back out into space.
I mean, how in the middle of the desert does anyone come up with that? I mean, it's crazy.
Anyway, also, curiously
enough... And why?
You will both maybe be familiar with the mysterious standing stones at Borough Bridge in Yorkshire on the side of the A1.
The devil's arrows?
Yes, but which are laid out in an exactly the same geometric form, the three of them, and they're huge great stones, which predate Stonehenge, I believe.
Right.
But laid out in a geometric form, which is exactly the same as the three pyramids. In other words, there's two that are aligned and there's one that's slightly gone askew. all aligned the same, but they're in Yorkshire. Yes, I think the stones, are ancient stones and their movement, and I think there's a book there somewhere on how they move them around and then how the people were moved around that moved them around. So I think that's what's nice about this programme, and if I may say so, rather reassuring. That some people would be discussing the pyramids in one form, but we're just working out the sort of transport issues, which are, let's face it, very important. You know, it's often overlooked, but historically,
I think probably a diesel engine.
What, they didn't have diesel then?
Well, maybe they did.
Yeah, some people say they had electricity because there's supposed to be one of the drawings on one of the pyramids where they hypothesise it was like a massive light bulb, which I'm. Not so sure of.
The pyramids just housed one massive Osram light bulb.
Electric bikes. They got them there on electric bikes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's been wonderful having you as our guest here today. Actually, it's just Molly. How long have we been talking for there?
55 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. That's fantastic. We only want 35, so it's fantastic.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes, perfect. So Nitin Sawhney, thank you so much for being our guest today. You're one of the only guests, actually, that has... Well, we'll talk about travelling, visiting Nelson Mandela, visiting the Aborigines in Australia.
And...
all on one trip.
Riding on an elephant.
Thank you for joining us, Nitin.
Nice one. Cheers.
Well, that was nice. And there goes Nitin riding off into the horizon on an elephant.
Yes. And what a convenient method of transport that is from Greenwich, going round the South Circular, as I believe he is this evening. It'll be easily spotted. So if anybody's listening in their car, keep an eye for a fellow on an elephant, because it'll be Nitin.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.